Hey, book besties, we're your host, Kelsey.
And Nikki.
And this is For the Shelf Podcast.
Before we get started, this podcast is intended for a mature audience. Use of profanity is a definite, along with discussions of mature sexual themes and graphic content. Listener discretion is advised.
Okay, so this week we're going to be discussing Phantasma by Kaylee Smith, but first let's get into some news. So before we get into bookish news, we have just like a little bit of other news to kind of prepare everybody. So that way we're not putting it at the end where some people might jump off. But just as a reminder, our episode after this one will be our last episode for 2024. We're going to take a break for the holiday season and then we will be back mid-January. We may pop in every now and then and just do like a fun little episode, but our next episode is our last actual planned review episode.
Oh, and you know what would be fun?
What?
If our first episode when we come back is just like mini reviews of all the books we read when we were on break.
Okay.
Something to think about.
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, then I just have to read books. Sure, I actually read them. Because I have a lot going on this holiday season, which kind of brings me to my next piece of news. Obviously, Nikki knows, and Nikki has known for a long time, but I am expecting baby number two.
Yay! Congratulations, Kelsey!
Thank you. I'm having a little boy. He will be born in May, and so this holiday season, we're just going to spend time, like, prepping our house and getting things ready. Even though it seems way early, it kind of sneaks up on you, and we have to do some, like, small house renovations to get ready. So I will be busy doing that during the break, but I will definitely find there's a couple books that I am like, I definitely want to read on my list. So I will definitely make sure I get to those. Okay. So now let's go jump into last week's bookish news.
Are you going to rip the band-aid? Are you going to do it first?
Yeah, I'm kind of
okay.
I'll just get it over with. Okay. So my absolute favorite topic, Quicksilver is back at it again. I don't understand the net of the anyways. So
you know, I have a thought about Quicksilver.
Okay.
Maybe most people did the audio version and didn't read the physical copy so that they weren't getting all the really horrible spelling and grammar errors. Like maybe
the audible version came out way after it blew up on BookTok.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
well, there's no excuses for you guys then.
Yeah, and I don't know if I think the Trad Publish just came out, so.
I saw it at Target yesterday.
Yeah, so it's not even, like, they were getting the raw indie garbage story that came out. I don't know. But anyway, so unless you were living under a rock, you probably already know, but Quicksilver was picked up by Netflix for a movie adaptation for an ungodly amount of money. They said seven figures. They didn't say an actual total.
Right, but that's at least a million.
So a ton of money. You know what? As much as I don't like the book, I am so happy for Callie and everything that is going on in her world and the blow up of Quicksilver. And I mean, Emma is fantastic for her. I applaud her. I'm so happy. I'm rooting for her. I just don't like the book.
You know, I wonder if it's kind of like a kick in the dick, though, because, like, she was, I mean, a Trad published author for years and years. I mean, she has a pretty long backlog of dark romance.
Yeah.
And so to be in it for that many years and then all of a sudden you write one romantasy and it's like, that's what you're going to be known for.
Yeah.
And you have all these other novels. I mean, I'm sure she's not complaining.
Right.
But, like.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, I'm happy for her that she's finally getting some recognition for her books. They said that she will be an executive producer. I don't remember the name of the person who's either producing it or the showrun. I don't know exactly what they're doing, but it's the person, I think they're the director. It's the person that did the Jane Austen, like, reboot, something that had Dakota Johnson in it. The Alien Romulus reboot that just happened.
Oh, I like that.
And she's currently working on The Nightingale.
Oh, that's Kristen Hannah's.
Yeah, Kristen Hannah's not
historical World War II fiction.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So that person.
Well, that seems competent.
Yeah, so I think she's a director. I don't know for sure, so don't quote me on it. But whatever she was doing for all of those, she's now in charge of Quicksilver.
I'm still going to watch it.
Yeah, I probably will. The only other thing that kind of annoyed me was they've already come out and said, this is going to be up there with The Hunger Games and Twilight from book to movie adaptation. They've already said, they're like, this is top tier, just like those two.
I don't know what to say.
I get that Twilight was like top tier for the year that it came out. But, like, rewatching that now is so cringy to me.
Every time I'm sick, like, homesick, I do a Twilight marathon. I still love the Twilight movie. There definitely is that weird, like, blue wash that they did throughout the whole, like, movie series.
I don't know what they're getting at when they say, like, oh, it's up there with those two. But I don't know.
Maybe they mean, like, for accuracy? Like, as in trying to be as inclusive of all the original text as possible, because I feel like Hunger Games was pretty close to the books, and I think Twilight was as well. I mean, it's been 1,000 years since I've read Twilight.
All I will say about it is, as long as it's better than Divergent was, because that pissed me off. I loved Divergent, and then watching the movies, I'm like, what the is this? Like, no. So as long as it's better than the Divergent adaptation, then maybe it'll actually be better than the book, which never happens, but maybe it will, who knows. And then also, like, they didn't come out and say it, but you can only imagine. So Quicksilver, it's part of a trilogy, so you can only imagine that the other ones will be made into movies after too. So we'll see,
I guess, depending on how well this does.
Yeah. So, of course, unfortunately, we will keep you updated with all of the news about it.
Unfortunately.
As we get it. Moving on to some news that I actually care about. Olivia Rose Darling dropped the cover for Wrath of Dragons.
Sure.
Go to her Instagram if you want to see it. There's also, like, a little... We kind of went over what the tropes and, like, kind of plot lines are, but... If you want to refresh on it, it's in that same Instagram post. It's going to come out on July 29th, which I'm excited about because it's one day before my birthday. So it'll be like an early birthday present to myself. And it's currently available to pre-order. Now, this is the U.S. cover and the U.S. edition. So the international editions will obviously be a little different. Okay. And then Carissa Broadbent.
What's she doing? See, I get the bookish news when you guys do. It's all new to me. I'm just like, Kelsey, tell me what's happening in the world.
So what is she not doing? So she just released her third book in the world of Crowns of Nyaxia. And I've already seen, like, spicy scene fan art for it.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it on Instagram.
That book is one of the books that, like, I'm gonna read on break.
That's one of my holiday reads. I can't wait. I almost bought it for myself last night, but I'm hoping Santa brings it for me.
Yeah. So I can't wait to read it. I'm super excited about it. But then guess what? She posted on Instagram yesterday that she hopes to have the revisions, not the drafts, not the first drafts, the revisions for book 4 done by next week.
See, this is what we want from our romantasy fantasy authors. Just churn those bitches out. Don't make us wait.
Yeah.
This is amazing. Thank you, Carissa.
Yeah, so book 4 will be the second book in the second duology. So it'll still be, it's the final part to Micah's story. So the book that just came out is the first part. Fourth book will be the second part.
Micah? Misha?
Misha.
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 Yeah. So it's her story. And then we'll move on to the third and final duology. Kind of confusing, but
I'm excited.
I'm
excited for this.
Okay. And then to kind of follow up on last week's bookish news. So you know how we talked about the ACOTAR cookbook?
Yeah, yeah.
There's also going to be an ACOTAR cocktail book.
Oh, I support that.
And it's coming out the same time as the cookbook. So it's coming out in April. But it's not by the same person. It's by a totally different person, but it's ACOTAR-themed cocktail books.
Huh.
So I don't know if they know each other or it's just like a happy coincidence, but yeah, they're coming out, I believe, even on the same day.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I feel like ACOTAR party. I feel like we should have an ACOTAR.
Yeah. Because maybe, like, they know something that we don't know. And some news is going to drop.
Oh, you think that, like, Sarah has told them something specific?
Oh, I don't know. Or not, maybe not them who wrote the books, but, like, whoever's
like the publishing world.
Yeah.
Okay. Like this.
Yeah. So, who knows? Because she hasn't released anything, and we know the book is supposed to be coming out in 2026, allegedly. So.
Yeah, but it's been, like, something like 273 days since we've had an update.
Yeah, but. I don't know. She's also a fan of Taylor Swift, and this is what Taylor Swift does. So I'm sure she's, okay, like, following in Taylor Swift's.
I don't know what Taylor Swift does.
It's a whole thing.
I have a piece of bookish news.
Okay.
So apparently George Martin of the Game of Thrones Song of Ice and Fire series, he's 76 years old. He came out and said that he's probably not going to finish writing the series. The sixth book in the series, Winds of Winter, was supposed to be released in something like 2015, and it's 2024. We still don't have it. And yeah, he said it's not done, and he's probably not going to finish it.
He doesn't need to. After the TV shows, he's just raking in all that money.
Well, yeah, and that's what, and like the TikTok or whoever that I saw about it was saying that he made like $1 million per season of Game of Thrones, and then obviously of the House of the Dragon, he's getting money from that, and
yeah, and then
everything else, all those little side books like the World of Ice and Fire and all these other things that he's done, these side projects and like prequels and what have you. Yeah, he's 76, he's made all his money, I guess, in his mind, you know, Game of Thrones is over because of the show and how you know
that tracks, because
but I'm not happy about it.
No, but that tracks, because he let the last season of Game of Thrones just go to shit.
Well, it's not his fault. The last season of Game of Thrones, they didn't have source material to go on. You know, the first however many seasons were the books that were written, and they were pulling from the source material. And then, so basically, they just had, like, an idea of George Martin being like, okay, well, this person is the son of these people, and this is what I want to happen, and blah, 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 and this is, like, the way that I think the book ends. And so the showrunners just kind of had to run with these ideas and, like, basically create their own season. You know what I mean? So that's why it sucked.
Yeah, but if that's the way that he envisioned it ending, then I'm kind of glad he's not going to come out with a book, because they would probably...
See, I mean, I don't want to spoil anything if anyone hasn't seen Game of Thrones, but, like, Jon Snow's, like, final... story, the ending of that was not what I wanted to happen. Certainly.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
I don't know. I'm sad. So as a writer, I understand that you don't owe us your art and you don't owe us your craft. But this is a beloved series that has been in the world since 1995 or 1996. So how many friggin' years is that?
Math.
30 years. Yeah, 30 years. People have been, you know, loving and reading this series and waiting, and you're just like, eh, fuck it. I'm just going to hang out on my yacht or whatever he does with his money. So I don't know. I'm sad about it.
Yeah, that's kind of disappointing.
So, like, Stephen King, years ago, when he was writing the Gunslinger with the Dark Towers or whatever,
yeah,
he had, like, a car accident, and he almost died, right? And he was like, realized after that series wasn't finished. So he, like, hustled ass to finish the series. He's like, because thinking about his fans and, like, if I die, nobody knows how the series ends. And George Martin clearly doesn't feel that way.
You know what George Martin should do? He should just employ James Patterson, and we'll get, like, 12 by the end of this year.
Right? Or, I mean, I suppose that he could pass the torch, like, Robert Jordan, the Wheel of Time series. Robert Jordan died before the series was finished, but he had everything mapped out. So he had Brandon Sanderson finish the series. I don't know if he had it, like, worked out with Brandon Sanderson before he died, or if his wife contacted Brandon Sanderson afterwards, but Sanderson finished the last three books of the series for him. So maybe George Martin should just pass it along.
It's unfortunate that he's going to finish it in any way. And yeah, I mean, if he could get somebody to do it just because, like, and it's not even because he died, it's just because he's lazy and he doesn't want to do it, but who knows?
I don't know. I'm sad. I'm disappointed in you, George Martin. That's so, so if you're listening, just know that you've disappointed this one fan. I am your biggest fan.
Yeah, there's a decent section at shelf.
Oh, yeah.
For him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's going to conclude our bookish news. So now we're going to jump into our spoiler-free review of Phantasm.
So I have a question. At the end of the last episode, did we tell people we were reading Phantasm, or did we tell them we were reading something else? Okay, so surprise!
Yeah.
I think we said we were going to read Heartless Hunter.
Oh, yeah, we were going to
read The Bridge Kingdom.
No. The Bridge Kingdom was the one before.
Oh, God.
It was The Singer by Kristen Cavallari.
Ciccarelli. I think it's Ciccarelli.
Yeah.
Kristen C.
Yeah, Kristen C. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. I fucking hated it. I had to DNF it. I was not going to do it. I couldn't. It was terrible. I'm sorry. I know that book is highly rated and a lot of people love it. I don't understand how. I hated it.
So I only read like 35 pages before Kelsey texted me and said we didn't have to read it anymore. So I can't give you my opinion about it because I didn't really give it a good chance. So surprise, we're not discussing that book. We are discussing Phantasma by Kaylee Smith.
Yep.
Okay. So at the time of this recording, the Goodreads rating is a 4.13 stars with 13,000 reviews. It's book one in the Wicked Games series, released in September of this year. It was also nominated for a Goodreads Romanticy of the Year award. It did not win because, you know, I don't know if you guys saw the results are out. Oh, do you want me to spoil it for you? Mm-hmm. Well, who do you think won Romanticy of the Year? She did. She did. Of course she did. I'm sorry for all the other really great books that came out this year that didn't really get the chance because, I don't know, Crescent City, it couldn't have been the best romanticy of the year.
No.
I'm sorry. I thought people who didn't even read that shit didn't even vote. Not that we don't love you, Sarah, but, like, I haven't even read it yet.
I DNF'd it.
Ugh.
No, it wasn't the best. There's so many good books this year.
I still think When the Moon Hatched, we should have. I was going to lose my shit, though, if Quicksilver won.
Oh, yeah.
So I was thankful that Quicksilver did not win. I do think When the Moon Hatched should have.
Yeah, I agree.
So anyway, this book is actually kind of described as a mashup of Throne of the Fallen by Carrie Maniscalco and Caraval by Stephanie Garber. And I totally agree. So if you liked both those books, this is their love child. This is their spicy love child.
Yes, this is an adult version, because both of those books are young adult. This is an adult spicy version.
The Throne of the Fallen, oh, is that the one?
I haven't read it yet. So
that one's spicy.
Okay, because that's okay. Set in the same universe as Kingdom of the Wicked.
Kingdom of the Wicked is a young adult series.
Okay.
Throne of the Fallen is an adult spicy. That book is spicy. I probably would give it 4 jalapenos.
I have it. I haven't read
it. It's so good. And the sequel just came out and I can't wait to read it. I really enjoyed that book. And I think that you will too.
Yeah, because I went to read it.
Spicy Demon.
So I have like this thing about me where it doesn't matter if it's the first book in like that like series. If it goes into a universe and books and especially a series has already been completed, I have to read that first. And I know it's set in the same universe as Kingdom of the Wicked, and I haven't read Kingdom of the Wicked. So I told myself before I read that one, I was like, I gotta read Kingdom of the Wicked and that stuff. Before I read this one. I know I don't have to.
You don't have to, but it would be helpful. Like, for example, the Once Upon a Broken Heart series. I didn't read the third Caraval book, because it was like you didn't have to, but I was a little confused. And I did have to kind of go back and like cliff note that. I did not love the Kingdom of the Wicked series as much as this one, but I suppose it would help to have the background.
Yeah.
But you're missing out. That was a good book.
No. Okay, I'm going to have to read it. Okay. But yeah, so this book, I'm kind of backtracking a little bit. So it was nominated for the Goodreads Fantasy of the Year. It's
Romancy.
It's available on KU, Audible, and Fizzcl. And fun fact, it won Audible of the Year.
Nice.
So the narrator is like, this is like her first like project that went huge. I love her. I follow her on TikTok, and that's kind of where I came across this book. I know it blew up on BookTok, but like I came across this book because she must have like some type of thing with the authors. But because like she does authors who, you know, they're not like well known, they're all indie published. Like, you know, it's not like she's narrating Sarah J. Maas's books or anything like that. So she must have something with the authors where she's able to go live while she's like recording, and that's what she does. And I just love her voice. And I like came in one day, and I don't know if it was this book or another book, but I was like in the middle of the story. I don't know what the book title was. I don't know who the characters were. I don't know the backstory. I don't know what's happening. I had no idea what page we are on. And I like listened to it for like 2 hours, and I'm like lost in the story, but I just love her voice. So I'm so glad that this book won Audible of the Year because that narrator deserves it.
That's amazing.
Okay, jumping back into where we were.
Okay, so we're doing genres.
Yes. So the genre for this book, it's a romantasy, gothic romance. It's also a dark romance and kind of horror, but it's like baby horror.
Yes. Almost. It's got some horrifying like scenes, but I wouldn't qualify it as horror.
Yeah, they're kind of grotesque a little bit, but
I think that fits in with the gothic vibe.
Yeah, of it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so now let's get into the description of the book. When Ophelia and her sister discovers their mother brutally murdered, there is no time to grieve. Ophelia must inherit both her powerful death-driven magic and an enormous debt on their home. Circumstances go from dire to deadly, however, when Ophelia's sister decides to pay off the loan by entering Phantasma, a competition where most contestants don't make it out alive, and the winner is granted a single wish. The only way to save her sister is to compete, but Phantasma is a cursed manor with twisting corridors and lavish ballrooms and filled with enticing demons and fatal temptations. Ophelia will need to face 9 floors of challenges to win if her fears don't overtake her first. When a charming, arrogant stranger claims he can protect and guide Ophelia, she knows she shouldn't trust him. While Blackwell may not seem dangerous, appearances can be deceptive. But when her sister's life is on the line, Ophelia can't afford to turn him away. She just needs to ignore the overwhelming dark attraction drawing them closer and closer together. Because in Phantasma, the only thing deadlier than losing the game is losing your heart.
Well, we're going to jump into the trigger warnings for this book. There are some trigger warnings at the beginning of the book, but it does direct you to the author's website for even more. So this is where I pulled these. So we've got gore, torture, death, lots of blood, death of a family member, suicide, depression, corpses, assault, OCD and OCD tics, including intrusive thoughts and heavy compulsions, explicit sexual content, sexual acts involving blood, and then one scene of dubious consent after being drugged.
Okay, so the tropes are, I think they were trying to say it was enemies to lovers. It's not. So we kind of tweaked it and said mild annoyance to lovers, forbidden romance, who did this to you, and games and trials.
So we're going to kind of change up our format. We're going to talk about the world building first. First off, I absolutely adored what she did with this book. Mm-hmm. I thought the world building was fantastic. It was really reminiscent of like the Night Circus to me, with just how frequently she talks about like the color and the furnishings and how the place is almost a character in and of itself. I have a quote that I'm going to read to give you guys like the vibe. The window stretched floor to ceiling with heavy black velvet curtains that matched black and white marble floors perfectly. The walls were dressed in ornate scarlet wallpaper, the color of new blood, and a grand chandelier made of iron spikes hung high above her like a medieval morning star. Before her was a set of onyx staircases that curved down in a crescent. Yeah. So again, just these like gothic kind of Victorian vibes. And I don't know, she really did a good job of describing it, and I felt like I was there.
Yeah, I definitely think, and especially because when in this book, you're basically stuck in one spot for the entirety of the book. And it's not like in other romanticies or fantasy books where you can travel and you go to this place and you go to that place and you go to the castle and you go to the slums or like you go to the fort.
Right, you're in the woods and like, you're huddling for warmth. There's none of that. There's no woods.
Yeah. So and the majority of this book takes place and they're like stuck in their own wing for the first 7 trials. They're not allowed to go anywhere else in their manor besides like their wing. So you're really confined to like a very small space. So adding in that detail to really kind of bring you in, she did a fantastic job. And yeah, like you could basically put yourself in the room with the characters because she did that like good of a job describing everything. I thought it was fantastic. It is set, and they don't say a specific time period, so we're just kind of guessing based off clues. But it seems like it's set in like 1920s, 1930s era. But we do know for sure it's set in New Orleans.
And the reason we kind of gravitated toward that time period is because they do talk about like carriages and horses, but also they talk about cars. But no other like major giant like technological thing. So we're that's where we're going with it.
Yeah. So I think they have like gas sconces, but they have candelabras at the same time, and their clothing, like they're wearing like the heavy like skirts, but the corsets, and so it's just kind of given like that time period, especially for like the South, basically.
So we've got a whole random cast of paranormals. We've got seers, we've got necromancers, we've got witches, specters, phantoms, poltergeists, apparitions, ghouls, devils, and they all are like very distinct and have different distinct powers. I don't think we're going to go into that though.
No, it's just like it just sets you up for the world that all of these paranormal beings exist. Like they have vampires and things like that, but you don't ever really come across them. The only ones that we know for sure appear in the book, Ophelia is a necromancer. And then Blackwell is a phantom, and Phantasma in itself is run by devils.
And then they do have, I'm not sure if it was ghouls or poltergeists, but they do have some like hauntings in the manor.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if that's run by poltergeists or ghouls.
Both.
Okay.
Both. So like the first one that she meets, I believe, is a ghoul. But then, like, other ones are poltergeists because the devils and the phantasma in itself will set up the hauntings. And the ghouls are kind of a wild card. So they don't like to use them as much because they're harder to, like, maintain. Okay, so for the plot, like, the general plot, kind of what the description talks about. So when you enter Phantasma, you have to go through, it's in total 9 trials to win. There can only be one winner. There are 7 that are specifically set up like the deadly sins. And then the 9 in total is like the 9 like circles of hell, basically. Because again, it's run by devils. And you can forfeit outside of the trial. But once you're in the trial, you're in the trial until you either make it out or you can make a deal with the devil or you die. And sometimes when we read books that have like the trials and the competitions, I kind of get like bored because they're very similar. You know, they all do the same thing, all the same people, everybody makes it out, blah, 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 blah. This one didn't. I was very intrigued. I was not annoyed reading the trials, especially when you hear that there's 9. You're like, I do this 9 times.
Right. See, I was annoyed at first because the first trial, it was a labyrinth. And I don't think we'll go into like specifics about the other trials. But the first one is a labyrinth. And I'm like, my God, like every book has a labyrinth. And it's just like, whatever. Yeah. And I was like, I hope to God these trials are not all the same shit rehashed. But I thought they were fresh and interesting. And
yeah.
my favorite one was the truth one. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
That was
fave. They were very interesting. They were all very different. I really enjoyed it. I did not mind having to read through through all the trials. And one thing that she also does, and it's kind of in the characterization, so Ophelia, we can kind of jump into that as well. So Ophelia, her biggest thing is she's the big sister. Their mom, it says their mom was brutally murdered, but she wasn't. Like, she was literally just, like, found
dead. Yeah, and for the majority of the book, they do believe that she had a heart attack.
Yeah. So it wasn't a whole thing. Like, they literally come down the stairs, their mom is dead on the floor, and that's how the book starts. So, you know, she takes up the mantle. She has to, you know, keep the family legacy, the family business going. Like, she gets her powers because they're necromancers. And for some, I guess it only goes to, like, the oldest.
It's the heir. Female sibling inherits the powers and, quote unquote, the family legacy.
Yeah. And so that's kind of what she spends there. And then it's not even actually confirmed that Genevieve, who is her sister, enters Phantasma. She just assumes she does. So then Ophelia enters because she thinks her sister's there, but she can't confirm because she's stuck in her little area for, like, the first 7 trials. But what I really liked is the way, like, you know how some authors, especially when you're doing, like, trials and stuff like that, they try and get you to, like, become attached to another, like, side character because the main character becomes BFFs with somebody and, like, they go through the trials and stuff together. The Ophelia was not that. She's like, fuck everybody. Don't talk to me. I'm not talking to you. I'm here to do my own thing. Like, I don't care about you. I don't care about what you're here for. Like, she, of course, makes an enemy. And there's one girl that, like, tries to be her friend. But she's just like, I don't want to even know your name. I'm not introducing myself to you. Like, I'm just sit here and, like, eat my food and, like, ignore everybody. And I thought that was very refreshing because you don't
see that a lot. I enjoyed that as well.
Which, I mean, of course, she, like, becomes close to the love interest. But that's, you know, something, like, separate. But, yeah, I thought that was really refreshing.
There was no found family
in
this.
Yeah.
Which it certainly was refreshing.
Yeah, for sure. And then speaking of the love interest, so Blackwell, he's a phantom. And he, to me, is pretty much, like, the typical love interest. Like, he's, like, cocky and full of himself and,
you know, yeah, he's arrogant. He knows he's hot. Stuff or whatever.
Yeah, he's, like, flirty with her and things like that. But then, like, it turns into, you know, he'll do anything for her, like, touch her and die type, you know, situation. But nothing, like, really special. I mean,
that's fair. And you know who my favorite character was in the whole book?
Who?
Poe.
The cat.
The cat. I love the cat. The cat is also a phantom, so he has this little, like, blue glow about him, right?
Yeah.
And he's just, like, this little phantom cat that just kind of, like, hangs around Blackwell and does his own thing, and sometimes he, like, sleeps on the bed with Ophelia.
Yeah. And he did try and get Ophelia murdered, like, the first second she's in Phantasma, though. That was funny.
Okay, but after that, he was super cute.
He was very cute. I did like him.
I did like a, you know, a phantom cat. Although, you know, she could have been a little more creative with her names, like Ophelia, Poe. Like, are we picking, like, the most, like, depressive, like, literary characters to name our characters after?
I think it is more of, like, the time era and, like, peace.
Okay.
Is what I was, like, gathering from it. Because then her sister's name is Genevieve, and that's kind of, like, an older name.
I have nothing to say about Genevieve.
Which is so,
as a name.
Which is so funny, because when we found out that I was pregnant, we already had our boy's name picked out from, like, before, like, when Scarlett was born. We'd already had their name picked out. But we were like, oh, crap, we have to come up with, like, another girl name just in case, you know, we have another girl. We were going back and forth. And his thing is, he likes names after, like, movies and things that he likes. Like, Scarlett is named after the Scarlet Witch, but also book-related. And she's named after Scarlet from Caraval. And so when we were going through other girls' names, I liked the name Violet because 4-3.
That's what I was going for. I really wanted your babies to be Scarlet and Violet. Like,
yeah.
Pokemon.
Yes, that was the only thing. That's why.
No, I'm here for it.
That's why he shot it down. He's like, "Oh, I'm gonna think it's because of Pokemon," and I'm like, "Or because like they're two colors, you know?" So anyway, we weren't getting Violet, and then I liked the name Mia, but he didn't, and so then we had settled on Genevieve, and I was like, "I've never read a book that has the name Genevieve in it," and then here we come with this. But I am having a boy, so we're gonna do. But it was what the name was going to be if we were having another girl. So it's just funny.
I liked Genevieve's character. I thought that even though she wasn't really present on page for very much of the story, you still kind of felt like you knew her.
Yeah.
You know, you still had this detail and you could kind of like get her personality. And then when she did come on page, she was funny.
Yeah, she was really funny.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like I would go and have like a drink with her.
Yeah.
You know, like I would hang out.
Yeah, which then you will be happy to know. I read the blurb for the second book because that's coming out next year. And that book is Genevieve's book.
I saw that. Now, I did not read the sample chapter.
I didn't.
Because I didn't. Oh, good. You didn't?
No.
You don't have anything?
No, I don't.
You guys might not know this, but Kelsey frequently will read the sample chapters or read ahead. And then in the spoiler review, just completely start talking about another book entirely.
Listen,
we have to delete it.
Was a complete accident. I didn't know it was a sample of the second book because my page stuck together, so I thought it was a continuation of the epilogue. So the last one was not my fault.
Okay.
Anyway, yes, I like Genevieve. She's like the little sister. She's like the normal kind of like bratty little sister, but also will stand up for her, like, I know it's kind of hard to describe unless like you have one, but you know how the younger sibling who tries to be the older sibling, you don't because you're an only child,
right?
But she's very much that. So yeah, she's the younger sister, but she acts like she's the older, like, big sister. I like the way that she played it out on page because it's so true, like how that, if you have that, how that interaction goes.
Yeah, I thought their dynamic was interesting, that they, you know, they loved each other, they cared for each other, but they still had all these little, like, I don't want to say issues, but they definitely had, you know, things that were in the way of I don't know, like their,
it's just
how,
like,
do I describe it? Because I don't have siblings.
Yeah.
So it's like they don't have this perfect, you know, dynamic with each other, but they still care for each other. So there's like issues that they have to kind of go through.
Yeah,
but they love each other enough to really kind of circumnavigate
that. It's very much of like when you have sibling envy. So like one sister or one, you know, not even sister, but one sibling has a completely different lifestyle than you, and you're kind of envious of that lifestyle. Like that's how it is in the book, because Ophelia has been brought up since she was little, knowing she's going to be the heir and she's going to have to take over the family business. So her mom, like, put a lot of this pressure on her to, like, learn all of this and know it. And, like, that's what your life is going to be. And Genevieve was allowed to go and be a socialite and have, like, friends and, you know, not be tied down to knowing she's going to have to inherit these powers and be, like, the next line in the Grim Women of Necromancers. So it's that. So Ophelia is envious of Genevieve getting to live this life that she doesn't get to and that she's not a part of. And then Genevieve's like, well, like, just don't then. You know, like, she just doesn't understand, like, why Ophelia can't just do what she does. So it's like that. And that's why I said, like, she does a really great job of putting that on page. And getting other people who don't know what that kind of dynamic with siblings is.
Yeah, I thought it was super interesting.
Yeah, and it plays out very well. Okay, so now let's get into our...
Oh, we missed the best part.
Oh, the smell report.
We missed the smell report. Okay, so Kelsey Gay will be so pleased to know that our dearest Blackwell does not smell anything like the forest. He smells like vanilla and tobacco.
Yeah.
Which would make an excellent candle.
I was just about to say, I'm pretty sure I own that candle.
Yeah, I probably do too.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know why he smells like tobacco, because he doesn't smoke. Nobody smokes.
No, he drinks. They go into the drinking
parlor. Whiskey, yeah, maybe, yeah, yeah, yeah. But then he would smell like whiskey.
Yeah, but I would assume like those old manors, you know, they would have like smoking parlor,
like a cigar room.
Yeah. Okay. So like,
well, it's never discussed. He smells like it.
Yeah. Okay. So now moving into our spice ratings. So I gave it a 4. There is quite a bit of scenes. I felt like there was a spicy scene after every single trial,
which I appreciated. Yeah, like the horror. And the gore and the blood and the like, the killing and the death. And all of a sudden, it's like, well,
now
I'm gonna put it in you.
Yeah.
It was a nice little balance.
Yeah. So again, just about after every single trial, she like needed a distraction or like to have her mind taken off of it. And there's a spicy scene. What I also found refreshing was she was more dominant than he was.
Yeah, in some scenes, she definitely was.
Yeah,
that was totally refreshing. And there were some scenes that I thought there was going to be a little more kink because he's like, oh, well, baby, do you like collars and chains? I'm like, oh, maybe they're gonna do that. And they didn't.
Yeah,
but
she's like, I definitely don't like it.
Well, that was later.
Yeah, it was later, but it was
like, it'd be refreshing to kind of have that in there, but. But he's got a mouth on him, and he does say a lot of pretty dirty things.
Yeah. And then, there's one particular scene where they're in the middle of a spicy scene, they're doing it, and a haunt starts, and basically blood rains down from the ceiling. And so they kind of get covered in blood, and Blackwell being a phantom, like part of like their bargain that they struck is like he can, make the haunts go away so she doesn't have to go through them like the rest of the competition does. And so he's like, well, if you let me up, like, I can take care of that. And she's like, no, we're going to finish what we started. And so, yeah, that's like what the blood scene is. It's not real.
It might be real, but.
Yeah, but it's a haunt. So like as soon as the haunt's over, then it goes away. So it's not like it's
not like they're bathing in the blood of someone they
know. It's nothing nefarious. It's not like Butcher and Blackbird.
Right. Or like Hooked, where he has that fantasy where he wants to fuck her in her father's blood or whatever.
I don't know if I read that book.
Emily McIntyre.
Not him already.
Okay. Sorry to ruin that scene for you.
But yeah, so
I also gave it 4 stars.
Yeah, and I remember
4 PMs. We're all
PMs. I remember, and I texted you, and I wasn't sure if this book was spicy or not, and I...
Because it does take a while for the spice to kick in.
And so I texted you, and I was like, is this book spicy? And then there was one scene where, like, they're making out or whatever, and, like, they're humping each other, and then she has an orgasm, and I'm like, oh, is it going to be that type of book? And then I was like, oh, that's, like, a baby spice scene. And then, like, maybe 4 chapters later, it was, like, the big spicy scene. I'm like, it's spicy.
I'm just getting these updates because Kelsey reads faster than I do.
Not usually.
No, well, it's the busy time at the bookshop. It's the busiest time of the year. We're understaffed. It's been like a whole thing. So Kelsey is definitely devouring these books way faster than me. But yeah, but so I get these updates. So at least I know what's coming.
Okay, let's move into Sweet Peppers. I want to hear your rating.
So I gave it 2 Sweet Peppers. And I gave it 2 Sweet Peppers. Because, like, most romanticy, he doesn't say, I love you. He makes these, like, grand speeches about, his declarations of love. And he has some pretty good ones. For example, in all the darkness, in all the loneliness, you have been my one source of light. My soul will go to its grave with your name echoed in my mind. And that was a sweet pepper.
Yeah.
So there was actually quite a few. He does say quite a few sweet pepper things throughout. So I gave it 2 stars for that.
Yeah, I gave it 3. He has a lot of sweet pepper moments. And then the biggest thing to know about this book is the biggest thing is you're not supposed to fall in love in Phantasma. Because if you do, like, you can get cursed. And so they spend this whole time, like, getting close to each other, but trying to not fall in love because they don't want to get cursed. And so most of the sweet peppers are on his part because she's, like, actively trying to fight it because he's a phantom. So he's a part of Phantasma. He's there, has been there for, he doesn't even know how long he's really been there for. then, you know, she's very much still immortal, so she doesn't want to, like, end up having this curse, and, like, she wants to, you know, win Phantasma and leave. So she really spends a lot of time, like, trying to persuade herself that she's not falling in love with him. But she does have a really big Sweet Pepper moment, and I'm not going to talk about it because it is a spoiler.
Okay.
So we'll save it for the spoiler part. But I did give it three Sweet Peppers because, well, you see and hear most of his. You read hers in the inner dialogue, and then she has, like, you know, the big moments towards the end of the book. But again, they're spoilers, so we're not going to talk about them here. So I think it was, like, evenly balanced in that. All right, let's go into our overall ratings. I gave this 4.5 stars. I absolutely loved this book. Again, I'm not going to talk about some of the main points because they are spoilers, but I kind of had a feeling I was really going to like this book because I really liked Caravelle, and I'm not going to say, oh, it is Caravelle. It's not. It's completely different, but it has kind of like the same, almost like storyline. Not the same storyline.
It has similar vibes.
Yeah, it has similar vibes, so I really liked that piece. The love interest lines are kind of similar. It's just spicy. And I think that, yeah, like, I think as much as I like Caravelle, I would have preferred Caravelle as a spicy book, but I didn't get it, and I still really liked it. And now I have this. And, yeah, this was a really great read for me. Because I liked that narrator, I listened to it on Audible. It was a fantastic Audible. So if you have credit, I would highly recommend you use your credit on this book. You will not be disappointed in the Audible version. Yeah, I just really liked this book.
I really liked this book too. And I'm giving it 4 stars. I probably should give it more than that, but I can't give it 5 stars because, like, it's not the perfect book. So I can't give it 5 stars. But it was so refreshing, and I was so glad when I started reading this because literally, I think we were talking about this. If I had to read another book about the lost female heir of a kingdom, getting her hidden powers, and then, like, joining the rebellion, I was going to kill someone. Like, I was going to murder a baby.
Yeah.
Not yours, certainly. But, like, I was just like, I cannot read another book like that. And this was just so refreshing and different, and I was just really glad to have it, and I had a great time throughout. I loved the world building, I loved the atmosphere, I loved the trials. There could have been a little more chemistry between the two main characters.
Yeah.
At first, it was kind of hard to believe that they were so into each other so quickly, but the spicy scenes delivered, for sure.
Yeah.
And then after, like, I had to binge read this, and after about, like, 60%, I was so friggin' hooked that I just read for, like, hours and hours and hours to finish it up. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm, like, reading it. I read this on KU. I'm, like, literally, like, walking to the kitchen with the Kindle and, like, walking outside to smoke because I'm a smoker with the Kindle. Like, everything I was doing, I had the Kindle in my hand to try to, like, couldn't put it down.
The ending of this book goes, like, the beginning of the book is really slow-paced, and then, like, towards, that, like, 60% mark, it, like, ramps up into, like, a super fast-paced story. I will say that, like, I didn't give it 5 stars because there were not necessarily plot holes, but they kind of rushed certain parts of the book, and they kind of, I didn't like the way the ending, kind of what the ending is. Again, we're not going to go into too many details because it's a spoiler, but there is a plot twist, which got me, I will say that.
It got me, too.
I'm usually really good about picking it up. And this one, like, had me guessing the whole time. And
My plot twist guess was so friggin' wrong. I can't wait to talk about it in the spoiler.
We'll talk about it in the spoiler part. But yeah, so there's just, like, a part at the end of the book that I just didn't really agree with. It just kind of seemed really rushed and wasn't, like, well thought out, especially for how the rest of the book was. So that's kind of why I didn't give it 5 stars. But overall, I really enjoyed it. I was really hesitant to go into it because the last couple of, like, super big book talk books, I have not liked. Like, I didn't like Quicksilver. I didn't like the Heartless Hunter book. You know, there was other ones that we had thought about that I didn't get into and I didn't like. And I'm like, why is this so popular on Book Talk? And this is another one that, you know, has blown up. This and what was the other one that we were deciding?
Was it Noctocadia?
Yeah, Noctocadia.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that too.
And so,
or Anathema.
Or Noctocadia. Noctocadia. Yeah. So I was very, like, pleasantly surprised that this was actually a really good book. I mean, I can't wait to read the second one. I hope with that narrator, and I cannot for life of me remember what her name is, and I feel so bad because I like her, but I can't remember what her name is. But I hope she does the second one, because then I'll listen to it on Audible. But yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed this book. Okay, so now we're going to jump into our spoiler part of our review. So join us next week for our last episode of the 2024 year. We are going to be doing, because it's going to come out around Christmas, so we're going to be doing a Christmas romance. So we will be reviewing How My Neighbor Stole Christmas by Megan Quinn. And yes, we are doing this book because I want to know what the freaking candy cane scene is.
I'm seeing it all over Book Talk. And we're talking about the candy cane scene. I cannot wait.
It's 100% the only reason why this book was chosen is because I want to know what the candy cane scene is. So that is going to be our book for next week. Again, don't forget to follow us on our social media platforms at For the Shelf Podcast and give us some stars wherever you're listening to this. That way it'll help to grow our podcast and our audience. Yeah,
tell your friends. Tell your dentist.
Yeah.
Get them all. I was going to say tell your grandma, but probably don't tell your grandma.
Yeah. No, don't tell your grandma. Especially because next week's book is also a spicy book.
Oh my God, that reminds me. That's about a grandma. So last night I had a bus event. We have a book bus and we did this the bus event. And we had blind date books and we had some LGBTQ ones wrapped up in like rainbow paper. And this little girl, she's like, I don't know, maybe 8. She comes up to me with an LGBTQ wrapped romance. And I'm like, honey, I'm like, this one might not be for you. Like it's for adults because it did say 18 plus on the front. She goes, I'm getting it for my grandma for Christmas. And I was like, okay.
Oh, Lord.
So someone's grandma is getting a spicy 18-plus LGBTQ romance. I hope they enjoy the shit out of it.
Funny. I love that. Okay, so now we're going to jump into the spoiler part of our review. Okay.
All right, you guys still here?
All right, so I'm looking at your outline, and the first one, I just need you to go into.
Okay. So how are they going to turn our sweet baby Fluffykins Poe phantom baby cat, like, love bug, into a demon spy? What the fuck? They make him a demon spy. So, yeah, he's the king of the devils or whatever, sends Poe to go in and report on the trials and then, like, report everything back to the demon king.
Yeah.
How are they going to do that to my baby cat? Thankful that he got a little redemption arc at the end. And he did choose to, like, not be a demon spy anymore and be, like, Blackwell's house cat.
Yeah. Yes. So, if you haven't read this book and you're just here for the spoilers, Blackwell ends up, the plot twist is he ends up being the devil prince. So, Phantasma ends up being his punishment because he fell in love with a mortal named Angel, which is also what he calls Ophelia. So he falls in love with a mortal named Angel. I guess, like, this is something where it was kind of a plot hole. So they have, like, true names. So I can't remember what his first name was.
Salamestris,
yes. So Salamestris, there was, like, a middle name. And then Blackwell, I guess, was, like, his last name. But his dad, who's the King of Devils, doesn't know what his last name is, which I thought was a plot hole. Like, they didn't really, they didn't go into that. But the whole thing is like, he gets caught and, like, frozen and, like, he can't do anything because his dad finds out what his true name is, which is Blackwell, because he had told his mortal, like, lover what it was, and then she's tortured and, like, until she tells them. So, you know, she is killed in front of him, and as, like, his punishment for abandoning, I can't remember where they live in hell, but for abandoning his dad and where they live for a mortal, he's put in Phantasma, which is the game, and the kicker is when Phantasma starts, he doesn't know who he is, and over time he loses all of his memories. So then this is like 5 centuries when Ophelia starts and enters Phantasma, he has no recollection of like himself. Like, he thinks he's a phantom. He does not know that he's like the Prince of Devils and he's actually the one running it.
And he doesn't remember that he's the Prince of Devils until someone reaches the ninth challenge.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he knows who he is and he can remember things.
Yeah.
So all throughout this challenge, he does think that he is in fact a phantom. And so he's not necessarily lying to her.
Yeah. But the biggest thing is she like goes to the area where Phantasma is going to be. And like, because she's a necromancer, she can interact with paranormal beings. And so like, she like connects with him, but she couldn't see what he looked like. And that's when he's like in himself and he's like the Prince of the Devils. And he says like, he's locked there. And she's like, well, how can I set you free? And he's like, a heart and a key will set me free. And then when she enters Phantasma and she meets up with him, he's like, I remember you. I don't know what I told you. And then she explains to him what he said to her. And so they team up. And like, part of the whole thing is she's trying to find his key to let him go free. Because they both don't realize, again, why he's really there. And then like, he has like a dickhead friend that turned in his mortal girlfriend. And he's stuck there and he like is trying to not let him out, because if he keeps Blackwell there for a certain amount of time, then he gets his sentence reduced and then he gets to go back to hell. And so the other thing is with Ophelia is she's actually, her soul is Angel.
Right. So her soul is the reincarnated soul of Angel, who is his mortal lover. My big question about that was that I don't think, does he know that?
No.
Okay, so when he's calling her Angel, it's just, I mean, obviously like his soul recognizes hers. So he doesn't realize that that's the reincarnated version. And he doesn't even know, like when he gets punished, at no point is he privy to the information that her soul has been put into this locket. And that she will be reincarnated.
Yeah.
So she doesn't know, he doesn't know. It's just something that we know as the reader.
Yeah, we find out at the end because her soul and like the locket. So like the King of the Devils, after he's sent off, like he's banished or whatever, puts like, yeah, her soul into a locket or something. And then gives it to like the Grim, like there's a necromancer that's in their dungeons for trying to start an uprising or something. And then that's how it get like passed down through her family to her. Yeah. And so she's quite literally the key to unlocking him and letting him out of Phantasma. But they don't put two and two together. Now the dickhead friend knows who she is.
Right.
But by this point, Blackwell's mind and memories are so far gone. Like, he says that he recognized, like there's something about her that he recognized, but he just assumed it was because her dad and mom were in Phantasma.
Right. He does say something like, oh, I recognize your essence or whatever.
Yeah.
So that was really him recognizing like his former lover, I'm guessing.
Yes. But they assume that he recognizes like her parents because her dad was one of like his like favorite contestants or something.
That he doesn't recognize that it's his previous lover. Because that's a problem that I had with, like, the Scarlet Sinclair vampire books or whatever. Because the main character was the reincarnation of a previous lover. And then she was like, who am I? Am I me? Am I this person? And she's having this, like, crisis, you know, of identity. And I'm glad that we didn't have to go through that here.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, at the end, where I'm saying, like, the thing that kind of bothered me that I didn't give it 5 stars is there's like a flashback scene, right? Like after she wins Trial Night, well, technically she doesn't even win Phantasma. She just like forces herself into level 9 and then he comes and like he explains the situation. And then there's like a flashback and that's how we find out all the information. And then it's just like so quickly done after that, I feel like.
It's so neatly wrapped up in a bow that I thought this was a standalone.
Which it
Well,
typically
it
is.
is, I guess. I know. And it's another, the sequel is follows Genevieve and not
Yeah.
her. But yeah, I was like, oh, that's also refreshing. Like, it's a standalone.
Yeah, which is also why, like, in Phantasma, if you fall in love, you get cursed because he's there because he fell in love. And so that was the part that really freaking annoyed me. So she spends the whole time, which is like 10 days, I think, that they're there. And she spends the whole time like, I'm not falling in love with him. I'm not falling for him. I don't do this. I don't do that. Blah, 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 blah. She's there to like find her sister. She finds her sister. Her sister leaves Phantasma. So she's like, I might as well win it and like clear the deck for my family. And then she gets to the end and she says, like, she comes out and this is like the sweet pepper moment. Where she says she was gonna use her wish to set him free. And then they like discover the lock and the key or whatever, and he gets set free anyways. And so in the
So
middle.
then she uses her. So you tell me if I'm correct, because I got kind of a little lost in the wayside here. So then, because she doesn't have to use her wish for that, then she uses her wish for a new heart, like a working heart, because
No,
the locket.
no.
Okay, so what the
So
fuck does she use her wish
she
for?
doesn't because she technically didn't win Phantasma.
Oh.
So she doesn't get one because in order to win
So then how
Phantasma,
the fuck does she get the heart? Okay, so they open the locket. Okay.
yeah, they
They
open the
open the
lock.
locket.
It's her heart. She gives it to
She
him.
gives it to him, so that means he's free. Now she's dying, and he's like, oh, just wish for a heart, I thought.
No. So
Okay.
he gets the heart, he's free, he goes into his powers and everything, and he is now the Prince of Devils. Like nothing is holding him back. Like Phantasma is crumbling around them. He says he can feel it. So she makes a bargain with a devil. Like so she sells her soul to the devil.
Right. Well, that's because he can tether his. Because,
He
okay.
can
Sorry,
sorry.
we're all over the place here, guys. So, but there's a heart situation in between what you're talking about, because what you're talking about is she makes a bargain with him so that he can feed off her like energy to fuel him. Because when he was in Phantasma, he had to feed off other people's years to like fuel his magic.
Yeah, but that's because like the bargain is he gives her a heart,
Oh,
and then in turn he gets her soul for eternity to tether
okay.
himself to the mortal world instead of having to go back to his dickhead dad. So that's what that is. So yeah, she doesn't get a wish.
Okay.
But he said because like he loved her or whatever, that he would like return it, like give her back her soul and like nothing. Like she doesn't have to. But
Wouldn't it be funny if he just didn't? Like if the book ended
no, but
completely differently? Okay, but.
this is where I get annoyed because she's free and clear in this moment, right? He's like, you need a heart, give me your soul, I'm gonna give it right back to you. And then you get your heart and get your soul and you can go and like live your life with your sister and like do whatever you want. She's like, cool,
Just
but
have, yeah, like I won't be there, but
Yeah. And
other
so
than
like they're still in Phantasma because it's crumbling around them, but it hasn't like completely like gone away yet. And she's like, cool, that sounds all good, but I love, and he's like, no. Like, don't say it. Like, literally all she had to do was wait 2 minutes and she'd be free and clear. And again, I understand why the author did it. It's because it's to set up their ever after. But it was still so annoying because she spent the 10 days like firmly
being
saying,
like, I
like,
don't even like you.
yeah, like firmly like saying like I'm not
Or
gonna
just
fall
put
in
it with
love,
me,
like
but don't be sweet to
yeah, and like the whole thing, and then she's literally in the clear and she's but I love you, and then she gets cursed. So
So then how
then
does the curse get removed?
because then that's what like he removes the curse, but in turn that's what has to tether him. So like he then gives she gives him back her soul for
Okay.
eternity. Because then he's now removing the curse.
It's
It's
kind of deflated. But you're right, the author had to do something to make her immortal.
yeah.
Because otherwise they would just
But
be living out like her immortal lifespan and he would be
which
immortal
hers was
and
already extended because she's a paranormal being. Like she's not like fully
yeah, but
normal.
it didn't stop her mother from dying abruptly.
But her mother dies because okay, so this is the other part that happens. So they find out that their parents were met and fell in love in Phantasma, and they got cursed. So,
and the curse is different each time. It's not just like a general fantasy.
No, and it's different for each person. So her dad's curse was that he was bound to ever love her like an obscene amount, like would never
like be, obsessively, yeah, like dangerously obsessively, like
love her. Love, yeah, her. And then her curse was that she would just like start hating him. And so she like fakes their death or something, like runs away and hides her and the two girls from their dad. And then their dad somehow figures out that like they're still alive. So then he re-enters Phantasma to win. And then his wish is going to be to bring them back together. Well, in level 8, I think it is, they have to like choose which one is like the real one. So it's like their most loved and cherished person. And there's an imposter and a not imposter. And you have to decide who is the imposter and like, you know, whatever. But the kicker is if you choose the wrong one, the real person dies in real life. And so it's said that that's what happens. Like, that's why their mom, like, dies all of a sudden, is because their dad chose the wrong.
Right. So she just dropped it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, again, doesn't fit with the book description about her being, quote unquote, brutally murdered.
No. Just literally.
That's a little typo thing.
Yeah. So in the book, it's presumed that their dad is still very much alive. And then that's all that we hear is that he lost her in Tasma.
Right.
And it's the reason.
So I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, makes a little appearance in.
Yeah, because I'm wondering, like, he was getting close, you know, to finding them. And so if he lost, because he lost in the Phantasma that happened right before theirs. And so he's been following it around. And then Genevieve was also figured out that their dad was alive. And she was trying to find him. So I would assume, like, he would have ended up in New Orleans.
Could be.
I don't know.
Who knows?
But, yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised if that's, like, kind of a subplot for the second book.
Look forward to the second book. So I thought that the twists were really twisty, and I did not see it coming. I thought that, okay, so my original thought was that Ophelia was going to be a phantom because she goes see-through. You know, when the weapons go through her and she can kind of like fade in and out of visibility.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, ooh, the twist is that she's actually dead and she's a phantom. And I thought maybe that's why like her sister never introduced her to her sister's friends, or she like didn't go into town. And I thought that would have been pretty cool, but that's not what happened.
No. And so at the beginning, when I was reading this book, I thought, oh, plot twist is he's going to be the Prince of Devils. And, you know, it's going to follow, like, the same kind of plot line that Caraval does. And then she did such a good job of, like, saying, like, no, 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 he's a phantom. He's a phantom. He says he's a phantom. Ophelia says he's a phantom. All the people in Phantasma say he's a phantom. So I'm like, okay, well, I guess he's not. And that was just, like, wishful thinking that that was going to be the plot. And he really is just truly a phantom. So then I thought, well, the plot twist is going to be she's going to win. I knew towards like the middle of the book, she was going to use her wish to set him free. I kind of figured that that was what was going to happen. But then I was like, but plot twist is it's going to come out that like he doesn't want to leave the mortal world. Like he doesn't want to leave Phantasma because then he has to like leave her behind and he doesn't want to cross over. So then she's going to change her wish to be that she just joins Phantasma and then they live happily ever after in Phantasma.
I don't know how they could live happily ever after. It's a horrifying.
Only for the contestants, though.
Oh, true.
So, because like all the other devils are like getting it and stuff, you know?
Yeah, they're enjoying the sin and the evil.
Yeah. So I thought that was, and then it ended up being that I was right the first time, but she did such a good job of convincing me that I wasn't going to be right that I was like, oh, okay.
I also thought it would be funny if she ended up taking it, not funny, but like, huh, like if she took his place and then he got to go free and then she was stuck in Phantasma, I thought that would have been a good
idea. Oh, so it just would have been like each other's entering Phantasma to free the other one.
Well,
over and over.
Overall, it was great. I really enjoyed it. This was a good pick, Kelsey. And
it was a very good book. I was very happy with it. So, yeah.
Wonderful.
I started the Christmas book and you're going to hate it. And I'm going to love every single second of you.
Oh, my God. I'm going to start it tonight. I have to go buy a birdhouse after this because my mom sent me a picture of a birdhouse that she wants for Christmas.
Okay.
At TJ Maxx. And, you know, if you don't go to TJ Maxx right away.
Oh, yeah, it's gone.
You go, so I have to go to TJ Maxx.
Yeah.
Buy a birdhouse.
Sorry, Nan.
But then I'm going to read the Christmas romance.
Sorry, Nan, if you're listening.
I hope not. Nan, you better not be listening.
Okay, guys, well, that is our review of Phantasma by Kaylee Smith.
So don't forget to follow us on all our social media platforms, like, give us some stars, Instagram, TikTok, you know, anywhere that fine social media is available.
Yeah, and then don't forget to rate this podcast wherever you're listening.
With five stars.
That way it can be put out there to the world for more listeners. And then, again, join us next week for our review of How My Neighbor Stole Christmas by Megan Quinn, featuring the Candy Cane scene.
All right. Bye-bye, besties.